And our guest this half hour is Amy Shepatrick, Head of Income Strategies at Pendal Group, to talk about the latest on the markets. And Amy, I just want to start with the price action that we're seeing in Hong Kong and Shanghai at the moment. Declines again, although fairly modest considering the situation with COVID, 27,000 new cases. Markets adapting to this new reality.
Absolutely. I think the markets are still on a high from, you know, the list of new measures announced by Beijing that they will be trying to lift the most stringent of the COVID measures from here forth. I also think that, you know, much like how the West, you know, found different ways of opening up. Australia did it very differently to various parts of Europe and the US. China is finding its own way, and it's been termed in China as, you know, a way of crossing the river by touching the stones. So, you know, obviously having now deaths starting to appear and also rising as a consequence of these rising COVID numbers is not a good thing, but we've yet to see what that tolerance threshold for Beijing is.
So, Amy, let's talk a little bit. Oh, it's Doug, by the way, in New York. Glad that you could join us on the program. Let's talk about the macro view away from COVID specifically. Give me your sense of how you're reading the mainland economy right now.
You know, a lot's been talked about these COVID measures, but what I think has been more important is the long list of measures that have been released to direct lending more at the property space. Now, as we know, the Chinese cycle and the global economic cycle is very dependent on how the Chinese property sector does. And so far, you know, this very prolonged episode of self-inflicted pain, self-inflicted property deleveraging has really been what's been holding the Chinese economy back. But I was surprised to see that the list of stimulus measures, you know, targeting the lending of from the banks to the property developers to either consolidate within their space or rather to just get the money together to complete projects that have been started and have been hanging for a long time this year, is in effect another sort of property stimulus that's happening in China right now. It's different from what we've seen before, but at the same time, it probably means that for now, the low in Chinese yields for this cycle has been seen.
Very quickly, you also have to remember that ultimately the government's going to backstop the property sector. How bad can it realistically get? Just in 20 seconds.
Look, the government hasn't been backstopping the property sector. Defaults have been running rampant, absolutely, and I think they're very much willing to let a lot of defaults go. My 20-second view, or my 10-second view from here on, is that the government wants consolidation in this sector, and they ultimately want to take back control of this sector, because having let it be in private hands for the last decade or more has reaped no good results for them.
And Amy, I mentioned a moment ago the US dollar weakening, although that is a relative term at the moment, but weakening it is. I'm just wondering what your outlook is for the greenback over the coming weeks and what the implications are here for EM. Is it emerging markets time to shine?
Great question, Paul. So I think that the dollar is having a bit of a respite. Obviously, we've had quite a lot of gains in the greenback so far this year. But I think over the course of the next few months, you will see some more challenges to the global growth outlook. So yesterday, for example, you saw the flash exports numbers out of Korea showing that they're down once again, you know, disappointing versus expectations, and semiconductors once again becoming a big drag. This is a really good lead indicator for the shape that the global trade cycle and the global economic cycle as a whole is going. And as we know, the dollar tends to be countercyclical. So it tends to rise when the economy isn't doing well and fall when the economy does. And for emerging markets, exactly as you said, Paul, when the dollar is in an uptrend, it is generally a backdrop of tightening financial conditions for emerging economies.
Well, the other thing that I think we can take away from the trade data for South Korea is that the exports going to China were very disappointing. And we know that the economy there is struggling, whether it is just all about the zero COVID policy. I'm sure that people across the country are feeling exceptionally fatigued by this. There's the problem with the property market. We're well aware of that. Give me your outlook for the credit markets on the mainland and whether we're now seeing a much greater risk of default.
So I don't think the risk of default is going to escalate from what we've seen. In fact, 2022 has been a year of default escalation for Chinese credit, especially in the high-yield property sector, right? So I think in the coming months, you will continue to get the bad names defaulting. What I am more worried about is that the sector spread of what has been defaulting in China has started to creep a little bit broader than just property. So it remains to be seen how high Beijing's tolerance is for that, because that has the potential to lead to something more systemic about credit onshore, just like we've seen, for example, in South Korea over the last month or so. But my outlook for the Chinese economy is probably a little bit two-staged from here. I think that the market is right to look forward to a lifting of zero COVID and the China opening up trade. But going into winter, it's unrealistic to expect them to open up massively, and especially with rising COVID cases, as you're seeing now. What they're doing now is putting in place the measures that will allow them to open up more fully once the weather gets a bit warmer over there. But more importantly, what I was speaking about to Paul earlier about the lifting of some of the really severe restrictions against the property sector, more to get the construction happening again, will be a boon to the Chinese economy from probably Q2 2023 onwards. So my near-term outlook is no better than it has been for the last 6 months, but my medium-term outlook is looking a little bit better.
Just in terms of credit, we heard from the South Korean finance minister today saying, you know, he's closely watching the credit market there, but doesn't see a liquidity shock. Is that your view?
You know, I think that it doesn't benefit any policymaker or regulator to really talk about there being the risk of financial instability. And clearly, when most central bankers are still on the path of tightening, they want to dismiss as much as possible or play down as much as possible the risk of financial instability in the economy. But quite frankly, I think right now, because fighting inflation is everybody's priority, the RBA probably to a slightly lesser extent, but it is still a priority for our central bank. It just means that you can't really pay that much lip service to this idea of financial instability. What I do think is that for the first time in decades, you're getting synchronized central bank tightening, and that leads to liquidity tightening globally.
All right. And in terms of synchronized tightening, we'll hear from the Bank of Korea tomorrow, expected to raise rates by another 25 basis points. Amy Shee-Patrick, Head of Income Strategies at Pendal Group, thanks so much for joining us.